Chris in Tennessee, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Welcome to the Revere Radio Network, the worldwide home of free speech. My name is Chris, and this show is called Nowhere to Run. You can go to our website, which is conspiracyclothes.com/nowheretorun. You can go to iTunes and find us there, and there's other ways you can find it on Revelations Radio Network, which is a new and very good station. Let's see. You can Podomatic.com and various things. You can do all kinds of things. But either way, however you found it, we're glad to have you. We've got a good show for you today. I've got a lot of different things to cover. I want to try to do things a little differently than I usually do. I've been rambling a lot, just straight hour and a half, just ramble-thons the last few shows. So we're going to try to keep it coherent and interesting and entertaining at the same time, if possible. But there is a lot to talk about and a lot of really serious stuff going on, so we'll try to get to all that. I want to cover a few things here in my notes just about random things that have been going on. This is the first show in almost 2 weeks. And so, yeah, it's been a kind of a busy week. I've been back on the road with the band and been getting started, getting back into the groove with all that. We had a few months off and just did some stuff in the studio or whatever, but we... getting back to the swing of things there, and a lot of mechanic stuff. I got our bus is I've been delegated the mechanic, and so not by choice really. It's just I don't know how that ended up happening, but so that's been keeping me kind of busy. And also I've been doing a lot of preparing a house for. I got an interesting story. This is a really interesting story. It just kind of happened. And my mom has been. She is a the house that I grew up in, she's trying to renovate it and rent it out, and she has rented it out. But in the past, I guess, month or so, I've been running around trying to fix all the things, you know, all the 50 years of problems that it's had that nobody's attended to, we've been trying to fix. So I've been diving into stuff I know nothing about, plumbing and electrical stuff and carpentry and the rest of it. And an interesting thing that I think is just an interesting story. When I first started working on this one room that we needed to get because the person was renting out quickly, so I just right when I started putting the first tape up to give it the first coat of paint, which is one of the first things I did, and was paint it. I had this book, this old book of like prayers. I don't know if you've ever seen these books that have like prayers that they just write. They're kind of silly, and a lot of them are a little, you know, silly. But at any rate. So I'm turning around at this wall and I'm putting this tape up, and all of a sudden I mean, this book just falls off the bed. I mean, I wasn't near it. I didn't shake anything. The book just falls off the bed. And I'm like, well, that's weird. You know, I mean, that for granted, you know, so I pick up the book and I open it up. The first page that I turn to is this page about, prayers for, you know how they do prayers for different things in these weird things, these books, but prayers for, if you're selling real estate, okay, your own real estate, you're trying to sell your house, I think is what the prayer was about. I was like, well, that's appropriate, so I mean, might as well read it. And and I was reading this, and it was just funny because the prayer was talking about you know, I'm gonna prepare this house like I was preparing it for you, and you know, just this long drawn out thing. But it was just like so weird, you know, here I was just getting started on preparing this real estate. A book falls off the bed. I open it up to the very first page. It's talking about preparing my property like I would be preparing it for God. You know, I was like, whoa, okay, well, I guess I'll spend a little more time on this than I normally would. So that's kept me pretty busy too, and along with everything else. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting little story. But yeah, that's all working now, so I figured out how to do all kinds of stuff that I normally wouldn't have figured out. Plumbing, for instance, is pretty easy. It's like Tinker Toys. It's really not that hard. And roofing and all the stuff that I normally, you know, would have relegated to somebody that charges a lot of money is just really easy. So, you know, so I recommend doing that yourself. I guess that's the moral of the story. I don't know. All right. Let me see. What did I want to talk about? I want to talk about Christmas, the Christmas show Frank did on Salvation Revelation and on Revelations Radio Network. It was pretty good. He went down of why Christmas is just a really interesting and not Christian at all holiday. But, you know, I think that most people get an idea that that's true. But I'm just really starting to be completely convinced that not only, you know, is it, you know, pagan, but it's also a really, really bad idea to practice it. And I know what that sounds like, and I don't want to be one of these crazy people, but, you know, it's like being in, what if you were in Babylon, okay? And you were living in Babylon, and everybody was like, and twice a year you had some kind of, like, feast to Baal, you know? And everybody would do something in that feast in Babylon. It was like, dude, it's Baal Day. Come on. What are you going to do? You know, it's Baal Day. We're going to go. I mean, everybody has this dinner. You got to have Baal dinner. It's great. Everybody does it. And you got to do, set off fireworks. I don't know if they had fireworks there. But, you know, let's say you did some particular tradition. And it was all towards Baal. And you're like, and if you were, say, Jewish at that time, you're like, you know, I really don't want to do that because, you know, my God specifically forbids, you know, me celebrating Baal in any way. And then everybody's going to be like, dude, it is tradition. It's Baal Day. Come on. Fireworks, feast. Come on. Let's do it. You know, I don't know. It's like my whole idea is if it wasn't some sort of trick, you know, obviously we've been tricked to celebrate, you know, the solstice thing and the Saturnalia and all that stuff and the Mithras or whatever. But, you know, I think that it means that we really did get tricked into doing it. I don't think it's like you can even make it be like, well, it's because I feel like it's, you know, I'm intending it to be this way or whatever. But it, you know, it's just so clear in the Bible. It's like, don't practice these things that the pagans do. Don't fall for the same things they do. Don't participate in them. Anyway, I guess it's Frank did a better job of that. That's why we were talking in emails before that, and I was really hoping he would do it because he would do it so much better than I would. He would actually like research it and do a really good job. He's such a good researcher, and I things a conspiracy theory more than actually help people with valid stuff they can look up and whatever. So, okay, that's done. What else? The Zeitgeist Challenge. People, I tell you what, I don't know. I've read in some forums and stuff, people saying that they have done the Zeitgeist Challenge and they've emailed me, and I didn't even email them back. And you know, like insinuating that I was just so blown away that they did it, you know. And I just want to say on the record right now, I've never received one attempt at that challenge, period. Not one single attempt from people attempting to do it. If you have done it, the whole thing is that I need you to post it to the guest book of the site so we can all see it, so we can all say, hey, there it is, you either did or you didn't do it. So that way you can't say like, well, I posted it and they didn't ever hear anything from them. So if you want to do that, you got to go to conspiracyclothes.com/nowhere to run in the guest book section, post it there, and we'll look at it from there so we can all see it. I've also heard people, I think Dire Wolf here on Revere Radio did a show about the Egyptian origins of Christianity. From what I hear, it was talking about the Luxor Karnak inscriptions, which he said he spent 2 hours on, which is really interesting considering, you know, we have that's in no way, which I think has been touted as beating the Zeitgeist Challenge thing, is not even close, not even approaching what was asked to do. Secondly, that inscription is based on, again, Acharya S. and Gerald Massey's version of events, and not nobody else. We have huge holes atheists abound that think that that is absolutely untrue. And I'm speaking of Acharyas and Gerald Massey, the self-taught Druid Egyptologists that everybody seems to hang everything on. I mean, most of this is about, and I'm not saying it because he's a Druid or because he's a self-taught Egyptologist is the reason that he can't make educated guesses. I have no doubt that a person that is self-taught might even be a better translator of the stuff, because I don't have any confidence in mainstream Egyptology or anything. I think that integrity of information is paramount. But if you can see reasonably that there are, you know, reasons to doubt it, and you can look at it logically and have both sides of the story, you can find out that Gerald Massey had an agenda from the planet Agenda, and there's just no way around that. And then you look and see what possible reasons he might have had an agenda, and you see he was this high-ranking Druid and mostly, you know, affiliated with that. I mean, all I'm saying is that if we're going to base entire history off somebody with such massive of a dogma, I mean, I don't want history of that nature, ancient history especially, being based on anybody with that kind of dogma. Not my dogma, nobody's dogma. Let's try to look at this objectively. And so when I look at that, I try to look at things in objectively, because we absolutely have to know that stuff, and we can't just believe things because it sounds cool or it sounds like what we want and it fits in with our preconceived notions. And yeah, moving on here. But anyway, I guess I wanted to say that Luxor inscription, it goes into that a little bit in the there's a really good movie. I know people that hear me talking about Zeitgeist must think, especially if they've never seen it, probably just think I have a issue with it. But I think that it's exactly the Masonic dogma that they've always had, and they've shoved it down our throats and made us think it was something new. But anyway, you can go. There's this really great movie a guy put out, and I can't remember his name right now, but it's a really good movie. It's called Zeitgeist Refuted, I think, and it's on Google Video. Zeitgeist Refuted. It's a good thing to post around, and he talks about the Luxor inscription and how even atheists don't agree with that thing. So I haven't listened to Direwolf's program, but I did invite him on the show to tell everybody about it and talk about all the stuff that he has been saying that he has whatnot done. He declined at this moment, but maybe we'll have a chance a little later. I've really tried to work with him on when he could do it, but I think that maybe we can get him on some other time. Anyway, so what else here? I was listening to a previous show, listened to myself talk about how I thought the pyramids were, at least I was open to that it was totally a theory, but I was talking about how the pyramids at that time, this was, I think, even before I interviewed Patrick Heron, this is, I think, two shows before I interviewed Patrick Heron, was convinced that the pyramids were of, let's say, benevolent origin. And I've since really, really solidified the theory that they are not, and that pyramidology is actually pyramidology is the idea that one inch equals a year, and so on and so on. Pyramid inch equals a year, and all this stuff. And that the history of the world is foretold in the pyramids and all this jazz. I really think that is bumpkus, I have good reasons to think so. But somebody just did on Revelations Radio Network did a really good show about that. It was, what's his name? It's Deception Exodus is the name of the show. Really good show. I think his first show was showing about how pyramidology was a creation of the elites specifically, I think, part of the, I think it, I'm going to get this wrong, so don't really quote me here, was the Jehovah's Witnesses, or perhaps it was the other offshoot Masonic issue there or whatever, but it's not just that, and you can hear on the interview with Patrick Heron, if you hear the extended version, we were talking off the air and stuff, where, you know, it took me a while to really accept that idea that the Nephilim, as it were behind the pyramid, but because of the Isaiah 19:19 issue, and it sounds like that, but I don't want to read too much into that. I do think that it is referring probably to something at Giza. But everything is just really shaping up to for me to think that they are of, let's say, nefarious origin. And I've got some more detail on that. I just wanted to glaze over that because I was listening to the show and I was just talking about it. And that goes for a lot of things in the archives. I really think that just so much has been changed. The course of the show has been a really interesting ride, really, because it's just things have solidified and changed so much as far as my views and everything. It's just and it always just seems like there was just this process of leading to different things that I had to connect before I could move on. It was like a combination lock, you know. It was getting one number right before you could get to the other ones, and then that door would open, and then you'd have a whole nother set of combinations, and it wasn't like I don't know. It just has come such a long way, and I remember having, you know, like many people out there, and I'm not saying that I have it figured out because I don't think I do have it figured out, but there was like this just main desire that needed to be quenched was to figure out what to consolidate. How does all this play into, I mean, all the New World Order stuff and all that stuff? I wanted to initially know the origins of it. What were their motivations? Now, origins as far as ancient history goes, but their motivations was important to find out the true motivations. I mean, I don't want to hear money, and I don't even really want to hear power, because I think it's far grander than that, and you can see generations of people living and dying without seeing the fruits of this. And there's a lot of reasons why motivations have to be something other than what we would traditionally think. But to figure out how all this played into it, and there's so much truth and lies out there, and the whole Nephilim connection and how that specifically tied in and how it made sense. And this whole mind control connection, really, really, it's the unification aspect of it that, that's what I'm going to do here in the second half of the show. I don't want to go too much into this, but I really want to just, if possible, if I don't even know where to begin, but I'm going to do another one of these, just laying it all out and, see, you know, just let it fly. What I think the, nature of the world is and has been for a while, according to the ride that we've been taking on the show and what I've been coming to as far as that goes. So we'll do that. Another thing that I wanted to mention about was Bill Cooper. I know I've recommended him highly, and I was listening to a little bit more of the Mystery Babylon series that he's done, and I really respect him in so many ways, and we agree on just about everything, except for I was listening, and I do see that he was, and this isn't really his fault or anything. I think that at his position, he was probably, I'm sure he felt quite lonely out there because there wasn't even anybody to, you know, check this out, cross-reference thing. He was very limited, in, I mean, comparatively to nowadays, what we have, limited in resources to confirm things or whatever. But I do think one specific thing is that he, and to his defense, he wasn't an apologist, I don't think. But in the most part, I think he understood that's what the elites did as far as the Gnosticism. They merged Christianity about 150 years later with different other pre-existing mystery religions. It's not that Horus actually did anything like Jesus. It's that they merged what they knew of Horus with what they knew with Jesus, and they did that with people like Plutarch, etc. What my issue is, and what I heard recently that made me disagree with him, is that he took as valid some documents that we now know aren't valid, specifically referring to some stuff in South America that we now know were written much, much later, and that weren't that they've been, you know, rewritten, if you will, by the Catholic Church and others, or influenced rather. But so I think that he was taking some of these Christ-like figures as that they actually existed, when in fact they didn't. But which is the reason that it was interesting is because he had it figured out with like 90% of these quote you know, Christ-like figures that did everything else that other gods did. But then there were some that only later we've, you know, really knocked down the texts, like Quetzalcoatl and so on, where much of that has been written way, way later and after the whatever it was, the Inquisition and whatnot came in and really drove some points home that shouldn't ever have been done, obviously. And that's another point I just wanted to make. You know, everybody says stuff about the Inquisition and all that stuff. You know, I beat up on the Catholic Church a lot, and it's really not a, you know, not a good plan. But I just want to make this quick observation. Nobody, it's like converted, like a magical conversion, like changes everything, you know, in their lives and starts becoming a good person because, like, they had an experience with the Catholic, you know, version of events. You know, they just, it's like you're either born into it and raised Catholic and forced it down your throat, or there's nothing, you know, there is no, like, presto changeo, you know, like, really just, you know, a free will. I mean, I know that I'm wrong there. I know that somebody's going to email me and say, well, yeah, it does. But, you know, you can kind of see where I'm going with that. I mean, it doesn't happen that often. And where I guess my point is, the Catholic Church from the very beginning had to kill people to convert them. They had to scare them to death. They had to say, you're converting or I'm going to put you on a stake and burn you. So there was people like, okay, I'm Catholic, I'll raise my kids Catholic, you got me. And so that's where a lot of that began, where, you know, where a true Christian missionary doesn't have to kill anybody. They can have millions of people converted to just by power, like miracles and power follow them, where death and destruction follow the Catholic Church. That's their means for converting, where true Christians' means for converting is absolute, total power from the living God. I mean, it's a big, big difference there. I hope that I didn't ramble too much about that. Okay, one more thing before we get going, and I guess this is kind of getting into it a little bit, but I wanted to talk about marriage. That's something that I've been wanting to do here pretty soon. Me and my girlfriend have been dating for 3 years or whatever, and we're going to get married here pretty soon, but I've run into a bit of a roadblock in that, marriage is a contract between two people and the state. It didn't always used to be like that, and my concern is two things. In this contract that you sign, which is very, very complicated, and not, you don't have to sign it, as if you want to do it their way, you have to. My issue is that if you sign this contract, the state, it's a business agreement between you and the state and your betrothed, and saying that anything that is acquired in this for-profit venture, i.e. your marriage, is split three ways, and that includes the children. And that's held up in the Supreme Court. You have people saying, well, you had a marriage contract, and therefore we own your kids, and therefore we, you know, get to decide what happens in these cases, in the very specific cases. You know, and I know that makes sense to people when they say, well, that's true. What if you're not, you know, it's like the state gets to decide if you're raising your child good or bad. And if they determine that you're raising them not good, then they will take them away and raise them the way that they think they should be raised. And of course that makes sense if the state comes in and finds, you know, some extreme cases of, you know, house in shambles and people doing, you know, lines off the, you know, whatever, the crib or whatever. And you know, we all agree to that, but there is this new problem that's come up with things like vaccines, which, I don't know, go to Google Video, type in vaccines. There's one, very good one. It's a presentation by a guy. It's usually number one. You might have to search for it. It's about an hour long, I think. But you can find a lot of information about vaccines. My point is that most of you know that vaccines are very, very dangerous, and they're made to be dangerous. And there's going to be a day here pretty soon that the state is going to knock on your door, and they're going to want to see the papers to see if your child has been vaccinated, and you're going to say, no, I'm not going to give vaccines to my child. And they're going to say, well, then you're abusing your child, and we're going to take them and vaccinate them ourselves because they're our child, and they'll take it to court or whatever. At least if you don't have that marriage contract, you can, and you have written your own contract where this, the kid is yours and not the state's, you have a legal recourse when it does go to the Supreme Court. You can say, I don't, the, you own the rest of the kids, but you don't own this kid. And that should technically hold up in court. Now, I could go on about that. Well, maybe I will just a little bit, because I think it's important to clarify a little bit. It's not just the vaccine issue. There are other things. Like, there is court cases where people weren't allowed to homeschool their child because they were teaching them Christian values. And you had a, I think it was a committee member, I think this is in Missouri, saying specifically to a mother that, because they had a marriage contract and the kid was technically theirs, they weren't going to allow them to teach them those values because in the new system, those values are going to be destructive, i.e. Christian values will not jive with the new world system that we're going to go in whatever year he said. You can see George Gordon for that court case and georgegordon.org, and he also talks extensively about what I'm talking about here. Now, the contract that you can write is the a prenuptial agreement, where generally people nowadays write prenuptial agreements about, you know, financial issues. But it's a contract that you can write about anything. You know, you can write it about what things happen in the event of a divorce, with the kids, with the things, you know, because if you have a marriage contract, the state is all regulating that. That's why anybody that has a divorce has to go through all kinds of troubles, because they didn't, you know, write their own contract. The state did, and they never really read it. And then, so it's just a big convoluted thing. You can't dissolve that contract too. That's the one thing that's majorly different about a regular contract that you might have between two parties, is that you guys could dissolve it gentlemanly or whatever, but with the one with the marriage contract, it is nobody can dissolve it except for the state. Anyway, so that's what we want to do. We want to get this, you know, do that, and maybe, I guess, hire a prenuptial lawyer, I guess. But my main problem is, the kids are one thing. I want to protect the children if we have children. But also, I think that it's quite possible that marriages and the marriage license in particular, especially the ones we had and grandmas and grandpas never had, and nobody, and this is a whole new thing that they've done, is they seem to have written God out of the contract. The contract, as far as I can tell, used to actually include God in it. It was a contract between, you know, when, you know, there were such things as marriage licenses and so on, but they were like, you know, about, they'd write a contract between you and your betrothed and God, you know, and the vows were about that. But these new contracts literally almost like cross out God and put the state. And my point, and, you know, we got, what, 70% divorce rates or something like that. And, you know, that's for a number of reasons, but I think that God in the past has been shown to pay attention to those kind of things. When people write him out of physical earthly contracts, he's like, okay, you know, you don't want me, I won't be there. You know, that's fine. You know, it's going to be, it's your problem. So deal with it. But I think that definitely is evident in the school thing. I mean, you can look at the numbers of what happened. I think it was in 63 when the Supreme Court and abolished basically God from the schools. Look at the charts. Look at all the factors. I'm sure you can get this on the internet. It's a plummet, and it never came back up. There was a little bit of hills and valleys and whatnot, you know, pretty steady before 63. At 63, it is the most noticeable decline of anything you've ever seen. And it stayed down, and it never even came back up, or it tried to come back up. So if you were looking at that independently, you'd be like, what the hell happened in 1963? And that's what happened. I think he pays attention to that stuff. And so my thing is, I want to be married first and foremost before God. I don't even care what the state thinks. I want to, you know, and you look in the Bible and you're like, there's not a whole lot about it, you know, except for like the patriarchal type of marriage, where, you get the father to agree kind of thing and whatever. But George Gordon makes an interesting point when he talks about, he always assumed that there was something in the Bible about being married, because every wedding that he went to, they opened the Bible and about somewhere about the middle, and they read, they acted like they were reading something. And he said one day he got to looking for that, and he opened the Bible to about the middle, and he read one way and couldn't find it, and he started reading the other way and couldn't find it, and ended up reading through the entire Bible and never found anything about marriage. And I thought it was real funny the way he said it, but it's not in there. It's just, you can't find Dearly Beloved or the rest of it in there. So my question is, the reason I'm talking about this is I really need help. I know my listeners are real smart, and probably a lot of them have even done this. And I want to ask, has anybody done it? Has anybody married off the grid, if you will? And if you have, please email me and tell me some information that I might find useful. And my email address is chris@conspiracyclose.com. That is chris@conspiracyclose.com. And I would be really excited to hear from you. All right. Well, let's see here. I've got a few more things to talk about. Tessarian, that was an interesting thing going on there. And I really feel like it's not done. There still needs to be more done. I don't know what. I kind of just have been going with my gut and just promptings to do different things, and I don't really have anything prompting me to do. I don't know if it's, what has to be done or who has to do it. Maybe somebody out there can do something. I don't know. I don't know what needs to be done, but I feel like there's a hole there that needs to be filled. I don't know what I'm saying. I guess that there's just more work to be done, because we're being with people like him, and I think that he may be one of the main ones, that we're just in we're so close to losing what we have attained in these 7 years since 9/11. There's been such a massive awakening, and we would be naive to think that they didn't foresee a underground movement of people that knew the quote-unquote truth. That would be the most grievous mistake that we could make, to think that they didn't anticipate that eventuality. We would be, and we will be, screwed if we think that we have a one-up on them, because we have our handle around 9/11 truth and Ron Paul. Never let your guard down with these people. They have obviously infiltrated the truth movement. So let's just say, what does that mean? What does infiltrating the truth movement mean? Does that mean making hit pieces in 9/11 and doing that kind of thing? Yeah, it does. And that's what they do. They keep public perception one way. And do you think that they also have really, really good propaganda directed directly towards the quote truthers? Because everybody that is just into 9/11 is only a step away from being into whatever it may be, 2012, or some kind of propagated thing. We're in serious danger of falling into the one world religion trap. One world religion might as well mean one world government, because it's going to be one world religion that is going to make us forget that one world government is a bad idea. And so nobody's going to go through and I know you're sitting there saying, look, I ain't going to be in a one world religion or whatever, but you don't know what's coming. I mean, it's going to be a really good, slick deal. People are going to be slack-jawed, their mouths agape at what is about to happen. It's going to be a mind-blowing thing, whatever it is. And it's going to be so obvious that that's the next move. well, what do we do now? And we should, obviously this means we need to unite in a more peaceful Star Trek kind of way. And, you know, obviously I would agree with that. A utopia is the goal. I mean, that is what we're being plunged into these dark times for, is this dream for utopia. But that's only, we'll talk about that here in a little bit. Let me take a break. I disregard that last bit. I'm going to try to clarify a little bit of what I mean there in the next segments. But I'm going to take a break, and we're going to come right back. And stay with me. We've got a lot to do, so I'll see you in a minute.
There's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad.
It's a simple question of weight ratios. A 5-ounce bird could not carry a 1-pound coconut.
My father's no different than any other powerful man. Any man who's responsible for other people. Like a senator or a president.
You know how naive you sound.
Why?
Senators and presidents don't have men killed.
Oh. Who's being naive, Kay?
Did I hear a briefcase opening?
Yeah.
If our own government was responsible for the deaths of almost 100,000 people, would you really want to know?
Russ Dizdar explains his ministry, Shatter the Darkness.
Almost 20 years now, we've been just kind of just trying to help people, minister to people, share with people coming out of cults, you know, just mind control, the occult, left-hand path stuff. And then we ran into the real underground that's been going on for a long time. And so it has a lot to do with deliverance and dealing with the dark side and power encounters. And, you know, it has confronting perpetrators of violence on children and ritual abuse. It deals with healing the hearts of the victims and, you know, keeping our guard and trying to do what we can to expose it, stop some of it.
You can visit Russ Dizdar's website at shatterthedarkness.net, where you'll find hours of free MP3s and podcasts, as well as courses for your church or your ministry to begin to learn how to deal with encounters of this nature in a biblical way. shatterthedarkness.net.
Okay, let's begin. I'm trying to decide where the beginning is. There's a lot of logical starting places, and I think that we should just, I mean, I don't know. We could start from, you know, the beginning of the laws of nature, the proverbial Big Bang, or we could begin at the angelic realm, the ranking, the reasons, the interesting history that was there, what their world is like, if you will. Because I think it plays a major role in the story. We could begin it at this idea of Babel, and I think it's really important to begin there. If you know, it's another logical beginning place because it was there that the geographical dividing up of certain groups of people were surrounded by and ruled over by these hybrid Nephilim, if you will. I don't know if they would at that point be the direct Nephilim or descendants of the Nephilim, but it's that's the reason that you find all across the world, you know, the same system in South America and Egypt and Samaria and China and Ireland. You find everything is based out of these people, and that's why they're all represented by, you know, you find the winged serpent is a representation of these beings almost universally all across the world, places that weren't supposed to have any connections. You find that they were all doing the same types of things, that is, occult practices, astronomy, building pyramids, sacrifice. These were all common themes among places that shouldn't logically have had any connection. And so I think that that's incredibly important to understand. And so that would be a good place to start. I think another, you know, a relevant place to start would be at Nazi Germany. I think something very significant happened there with the theosophic idea with Madame Blavatsky and whatnot, you know, inspiring this Aryan blood thing, which was essentially, there's a cult power in this Nephilim hybrid blood. They were trying to isolate that bloodline for more power, essentially. And that's what that was about. And that was a bloodline that they could isolate, I guess is what they had access to. But that's when the Levens born and all that stuff. Now, I think that that's interesting to start, because you can marry the two systems of what happened there with their mind control, the trauma-based mind control that they began and refined, presumably at the concentration camps, but definitely was totally enveloped into the American system in a project called Operation Paperclip, where we brought over some 500 mind control scientists at the end of the war in order to keep them presumably out of the hands of our enemies. And they, you know, they should have got tried for war crimes, but instead we brought them over. We also brought over rocket scientists and things, you know, for our NASA program, which it later became Nazi NASA and all that. We've gone over that several times. So there's a lot of places to begin, but I know that we probably have some newer listeners because of the recent talking. And so I think it's probably good to clear up my version, or most of the people that I know that have really studied this and weeded through all the propaganda's version of what the explanation for this is. Now, you have your Sitchins and Tessarians and Freemans and the rest of them that will tell you that we are the explanation for the anomalies of ancient history is aliens, essentially. And that is, I'm not saying that aliens don't exist even in the most run-of-the-mill way, even from another galaxy far, far away kind of situation. I'm not saying that I know that that doesn't or does not, you know, whatever, exist. But I will say that it doesn't prove or disprove anything if it does, especially, we'll get into that here in a second. I just wanted to make that caveat. So their theory is to explain the anomalies of ancient history, and I know that many people have read Sitchin and done those kinds of things, and I need you to go right now and pause this and go read through SitchinIsWrong.com and see what you think about that. Read and see if you can believe Sitchin anymore, and see if he made those mistakes by accident or he knew what he was doing. And I'm not, and I know there's other reasons to implicate Sitchin as one of them, but I think that website speaks for itself as far as his mistakes. But it's crucial to understand, first of all, that what you think you know about Sitchin and all the ancient astronaut theory needs to be reevaluated with a more logical look. And I have an even weirder version than Sitchin. Probably, but I think the one thing that it has going for it is that it's totally true and easy to back up. Something Sitchin doesn't do. Sitchin must rely on this idea that he is the only person in the world that can translate the cuneiform of Sumerians, and you're one of 100, you know, in the world that can only do it, and he's even more special than all of those. So says on the back of all his books. But really, this isn't about him, because we have to go a lot further than that. The reason that this situation is being propagated and funded by the elites is, well, there's many, many reasons, but one of them is one world religion. It is the only way to unite everybody in a one world government. You can't create patriotism for a one world government without a one world religion. You can't have a one world religion without the patriotism for Earth. We're all Earthlings. We're no longer countries. We all have, you know, we can have our own soccer team, Earth soccer team, you know, and then we'll all be rooting for the same team, you know. I mean, that's the patriotism that must happen in order for us to unite in a one-world government. And so there's a reason for that, but there's also a reason that you can put at the head of a one-world religion a singular individual. Once you have a one-world government ruled by one singular individual, you can go ahead and put him in charge of the church, too. And if you can create one individual that is deserving of worship, then that individual would be embodied by one of these entities that get off on getting worshipped, at the very least. I don't know what's in it for being worshipped, but apparently these entities really like it. Let me talk about that for a second. I think that one of the things that we find with these speakers and quote teachers is that they like Tessarian, whatever. He agrees there are entities, spiritual entities, that have nothing to do with his previous highly intelligent race that came down here in spaceships and genetically modified the apes or whatever. We have, in addition to that, another group that can be contacted via channeling or Enochian magic or astral projection or any number of these occult methods. So we have this being separated from this other group of physical aliens. As far as I know, he hasn't tied those two together. You have other people that have clearly been involved in the deepest levels of this system that make that same connection. Yes, there are the early race, the whatever they call them, Pleiadians, Reptilians, whatever, the physical beings, and then there is also a spiritual dimension and spiritual beings that have an agenda as well. We can even take out whether or not those beings are good or bad or any moral compass, whatever. We just can just say they have an agenda. And further, that most of the, quote, magic being done by people is to do with asking for help from this second group, this spiritual group, that there has never been an indication, just looking at it scientifically, logically, that we have any idea what whether they can be trusted, whether or not they are capable of lying, would they want to lie, do they have an agenda. I mean, these are, you know, you can look at this, for me coming from my perspective, that's fine. But can you tell me, you know, you out there channeling, you out there contacting via ritual, can you tell me that you know what they want? Or could it be, is it even within the realm of possibility? I'm just asking, is it possible that what you think you're doing for you, could it have more benefit for them? Well, how could that be? What could be benefiting them? They made really, really sure that we knew how to do certain things, to contact them, to bring them into our plane. You know, when you channel somebody or you do Enochian magic to get a hold of one of these entities, it's a process. You know, you just can't be like, hey, what's up? Why don't you come down here and talk to me? You've got to do some stuff. I guess it'd be imposing my moral compass on you by saying it's not a good process, but It's a process, whether or not, you know, you would take the moral bit out of it. And that suggests that there's a way to do it. Now, that's where a lot of the reverse conspiracy theories, if you will, of this people being able to tell you that everybody's lying to you. They never wanted you to know how to do this. So that knowledge, the occult, the hidden knowledge, is what has been hidden from us all this time. And now that we have access to it, we should learn how to do everything about it, and so that we can contact these entities, i.e. Reed, bring them into our plane, which they taught us how to do. Why would they teach us how to do that if not because they needed us to? I don't think that you have to really reach that far once you have, especially if you've had any contact with these beings. You don't have to reach very far to understand that they are really concerned about our wills, our decisions. And at the very least, we are important to them, and in the way that our decisions, that they seem to be under some kind of rule system, to whether they can talk to us or manipulate events and do things only through willing vessels, people that have either indirectly or directly given them that chance, that will. And that brings into a lot of questions, but let's try to get back on track here. Well, before I do, I just want to suggest this, that, you know, a lot of you, if you are out there, are probably defending this idea right now. You're saying, well, you know, you're not getting the whole story right about this Enochian magic and channeling. You're not quite getting this all figured out. Well, you know, even if we're going from the Tessarian and Freeman perspective, if you will, that the elites, George Bushes and the rest of them, you know, at the very top of European bloodlines, the rest of them are doing Enochian magic and contacting these entities and are now owe them blood. And that's why we're having these wars to fight these wars so that they can die in general geographical locations to be sacrifices for these gods that have been contacted. So we have this, how are we going to separate that realm, the one that they're contacting and have to do blood rituals for, because they're in debt to them now for contacting them and getting information from them. Now, are we, through channeling, contacting a different group? I know I've heard Freeman say, well, you can channel low and channel high. Well, and you know, it's a dangerous game. Well, you know, what's the... is that what we're reduced to? Guessing, you know, getting lucky? We're reduced to, you just got to channel all the time and just hope for the best. Do you really think that that's what the universe is about? I mean, I don't know of anybody. I mean, I'm sure you can channel a being that's not going to require you to kill anybody. And I'm sure that you can, I'm just saying it can't be that stupid. And I mean, we got to at least give the opportunity, the thought a chance that there is a whole nother group out there that we just simply don't know about, that operates in another dimension. Doesn't necessarily mean they're any less real, but that they are in another dimension, and that we think that just having contact with them, thinning the veil from the two dimensions, puts them on a pedestal when they could be just rogue assholes. And just because you found a way to mingle in their dimension means nothing. It doesn't mean they're good or bad or godlike or have any information that you should take as fact. It just means that you have been told how to thin the veil. You've just done what you're told, essentially. And it's not hidden. Wake up. It's not even close to hidden. I mean, can you watch... If the New World Order has such complete control over the TV and the news channels that I see that they do, I mean, I know that the mandate comes down from the top not to breathe a word of Ron Paul, and that's on every channel, every station. They own everything, you know. Then how come they are so bad about making, you know, brainwashing us into thinking that this occult side is so good. Does that mean that the real good side is winning, that we've actually broken through and we've gotten all the major studios to put out pro-occult stuff and we're beating the New World Order because we're getting all this hidden information out and we're going to really beat the New World Order now? Or is it absolutely, totally, completely, absolutely, totally logical that they want us to think that? I mean, like 90%, I mean, not really, but there's a lot of shows out there that are just so clearly fluoride, dum-dum propaganda that, you know, hey, tarot cards are wonderful. It'd be a sitcom called Tarot Cards Are Wonderful. Everybody should do them. It's great. Also, check out this other stuff. I mean, it's like all about it. It's so freaking obvious that they are dumbing down that aspect for the dum-dums. And you can't convince me that that's some kind of renegade thing that they've infiltrated the studios and now they've got the truth out to people finally. And you still have people walking around and they're black and saying, well, you know, I happen to know about a very dark and mysterious thing that has been kept from people for so long, and I am one of the few that have figured it out. Well, you know, you can believe that, but you totally fell for some state-sponsored propaganda, whether you know it or not. You're not a renegade. You are a friggin' slave. And it goes all the way to the top. And there is one agenda that has very much everything to do with the one-world government and a complete enslaving of people and a thinning of the population and all these things that we now see as, synonymous with this, quote, New World Order. Is exactly the order that was spoken of very clearly in the Bible. And it's too close now to say it's a coincidence. The only thing that the other side does is say, well, they're just playing it like a playbook. Well, there's a lot of things in there that you can't have any control over, you know? There's a lot of things that you can. If you really had all the money and power in the world, you could see this prophecy and play it like a playbook, but why would they be so adamant about its discrediting? And you know, you can be sure that they're discrediting it with lies. If it was so easy to discredit it with truth, you would think that you would hear truth. But it all the stuff, that's why apologetics exists, is because this bad philosophy is and these lies exist. There would be no reason to debunk the Da Vinci Code if it was real, but that's why you have like a whole cottage industry of people debunking the Da Vinci Code, is because it's complete and utter trash. It's like, it's really dumbing down, it's really expecting that America is dumbed down to sell that stuff to them. Because, I mean, there's just out and out, total, inconsistent, flat out lies. And the only reason it sold those lies is because the first page of the book says the following is true and it's a fact and all this stuff, and that was the selling point. People were like, no man, this is true, man. Says right there, first page, man, this is a true story. Jesus and Mary Magdalene, that's in the Bible, man. It says that about Jesus having a baby, and that's in the Bible. It's in there, but somewhere in the middle probably. But okay, well, we were way, way, way off track. But I think it's probably good that we got that done. Okay. Of course, they're going to use the scientific dictatorship is something that, you know, you hear a lot of the great authors have spoken about. Huxley, who probably was one of them, I'm pretty sure of now. Orwell, who I don't think was, but he was a troubled man, it seemed like to me, but I don't think he was one of them. He may have been. But I don't know. Anyway, my point is that this scientific dictatorship must jive with science, because we worship technology, and so whatever dogma has to jive almost totally with science. And that's why the Masonic and sub-Masonic propaganda that we're getting concerning this new world religion, everybody unite under the world religion, aliens are going to be great, and we're going to have a super new system, and it's going to be like Star Trek. Well, they're going to jive that with something that we already love and worship, which is science. That's why the genetic modification is such a crucial aspect. Because that's something that we totally understand, and we understand now in our computer age. We're like, oh yeah, genetic modification. You mean they were just messing with our genes and our DNA? That's what this is all about. Oh, it makes so much sense. You know, that's the missing component that makes all this work, because that's something that we are already ready to worship, that kind of technology, and that will make sense, because the whole Darwin aspect is spinning its wheels. It's, you know, I mean, it's on its last leg, and there's a transition that has to happen, because they're teaching that in schools, you know, and eventually that's going to be like, what are you guys doing? You know, I mean, even the atheists are now coming to terms with the fact that that's not a good model, and it doesn't explain any of the it can't explain what happened, because it doesn't explain any of the beginning parts. I mean, you can't, it doesn't work. And I think a lot of people are waking up that there has to be intelligent design of some kind to explain the genetic code, to explain those kinds of things. And I don't think that that transition is going to be to creationism. So I think that that's what this is predicating this on. This conspiracy is, in fact, you know, the forefront of what's going to happen. I think that that's what's so unique about this situation that we're in here, that we're seeing the forefront, we're on the forefront of what is going to be played out globally here. And so it's a unique position to see, to test and to see what's going to be used. And you could just mark my words that the scientists will, in this scientific dictatorship, is going to be chiefly based on that idea, that genetic modification of a super intelligent race, one that we can fully give our reverence and even possibly worship to their leader, because they will no doubt have somebody that they think is super cool, and we'll be like, by proxy, like, yeah, I guess he's super cool too. I think we'll be with him if that's who you think is the one, because you guys 10,000 years ago knew about genetic modification, so you probably know what's best for us anyway. And of course we'd like to, and I'm sure I've always just assumed that they'd answer questions like, well, where did you guys come from? I mean, who created you? And they'll probably glaze over that, because there's not going to be enough time left, and they're going to say something like, well, you know, it's always gone on from the beginning of time immemorial. It's always gone on like this, and something like that. But there's not going to be probably a very good explanation about, because eventually you have to come back to the same primordial sea and lightning striking it, and then instantly creating a working multi-part cell that is capable of producing any kind of natural selection, which is impossible without all building blocks functioning simultaneously and perfectly the first time. So we've got, and not to mention the interspecies shifts that is never, you know, I'm not going to get into that, because this is not what this is about. But you see what I'm saying. That's why the shields are shilling that way, because it's absolutely crucial to the New World Order system. Okay, another crucial aspect of this is this Nephilim, whatever you want to call it, that we have I would recommend a few people to really go into detailed study about this, more than I'm going to do here for sure, but there is a lot of people that have done great work on this. Dr. Heiser, Chuck Missler, even, you know, you got your Russ Dizdar puts a really interesting perspective on it, but it still jives with all of them. Even Patrick Heron, and, you know, Tom Horn to a lesser extent. And, it's almost out of the bag, as it were. And the thing you have to realize is this isn't a rationalization. This isn't an attempt to cover up what is being said in the conspiracy world. They are attempting to cover up what is being said in the Bible by their thing. It's completely the reverse of what the knee-jerk reaction is. They are trying to keep this aspect away. And the same thing with Enoch. They try to make Enoch be some kind of New Age document. You got to make sure you get the right one. Enoch 1 is what it's referred to. And the book of Jude refers to the Enoch and his writings as prophecy. And while I don't think it's probably you know, not to hang on every word or anything. It's not, I wouldn't say it's uninspired, but it is definitely something that gives you a better idea of what these Nephilim were about. But I think that just in Genesis 6, we have a very clear picture too. It says, and it came to pass when men began to multiply on the face of the earth and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God, the Benaha Elohim, saw that the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them wives, any of all that they chose. And the word there, the sons of God, is always used in reference. I think there's another time, but in majority throughout the entire Bible, that term is used for angels. The sons of God is referring to a separate created race called the angels. And it appears that they came down to earth. And here we get a picture in Jude that they disrobed. Here, let me read this part for you. I like the book of Jude. I got like a good feeling about the book of Jude. It was Jesus's brother who wrote the book, and it's a real small book, but there's so much insight in it. I get the feeling Jude, Jesus's brother, was kind of a conspiracy theorist. I bet he was reading a lot of, obviously he was reading Enoch and stuff. He quotes Enoch, and you get the impression he was interested in some things that a lot of people, other people weren't interested in. He definitely seemed like he was very interested in these sons of God and whatnot. But he also, because of the apologetics thing, this is where you find that verse 3, when it says, ye should earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints, and talks about, I just really like the little book of Jude here. But the reason I am bringing this up is because to further explain about this Nephilim, he says, and the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, and the word their habitation is oikotherion in the Greek, and it refers to the same body that we will attain at the when we get our new bodies or whatnot, the bodies that we get, the eternal bodies. That's what these angels disrobed from. They kept not their first habitation. He hath reserved in everlasting chains under the darkness. And he says that those angels who kept not their first estate, God hath reserved them in everlasting chains under darkness unto judgment of the great day. So those ones that came down here and had sex with the women and produced the Nephilim, they got in big, big trouble apparently. They got sent to the abyss, and they're there unto the judgment of the great day. But they did get offspring, and the offspring apparently spread to the entire world. I'll get to that in a second. And then he says this: even Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. Now see, he's comparing the sin that the angels did to that of Sodom and Gomorrah, going after strange flesh. He's linking them directly and saying that the angels, linking that to Sodom and Gomorrah, saying that it was also them going after strange flesh. So that's a clear indication of what we're talking about here. Now, you go back to Genesis 6 and getting a pretty clear picture of what was happening there. And then he says about Noah, he says, and these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. Okay, now, the term there, perfect in his generations, are very important words. I have this here super, super, super duper Bible that my girlfriend got for me. It's got like just the Strong's Diction Concordance in it, and like every, it's like got bells and whistles on it, just like really informative. But it says the term perfect and in his generations are very important words. Perfect is referring to kind of like without blemish. That is, it's no, like, you know, they would use for physical blemishes and things, that he was without blemish in his generations. And the generations is more referring to kind like your genealogy. There was a gene pool problem, as Chuck Missler says. So Noah apparently was not affected by whatever this was that was covering the rest of the earth. And you find God saying, that the whole worth, the whole world had been corrupt. The earth, he says here, the earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. Okay, so that's what we're, what the picture that we have here is that this is something that you might not understand unless you understand what the concept of what happened in Genesis 3 with the garden. When God declared war on Satan for deceiving, the same thing he's doing now, telling man that that God didn't want him to have this knowledge, and that if he only did these certain things, he could have knowledge and be like God, and God didn't want him to be like God. And it's the same exact principle that Caesarion is selling you, and everything else. I mean, it's the same principle from the very beginning. It's so funny almost. But the gig is that at that point when he declared war on Satan, he also was making plans to redeem man who had just given away this great sin-free life. I mean, you can't prove to me that Adam and Eve weren't living in three dimensions, or were living in three dimensions. I mean, they had no need for anything. But what they lost was immediately made provisions for to get them back, to save them. And that was what God prophesied at that point, saying, I will bring from her seed, and from these two guys, I'm going to bring a redeemer that's going to crush your head, speaking to Satan. And you will bruise his heel, but he's going to crush your head. And reading into that, Satan knew what he was talking about. He was saying, through this line, through mankind, I'm going to bring a redeemer. The strong man that cometh, that the Zodiac was even referring to, but it was way before that, called the Maseroth. It was prophesied for a long time. That was, Satan knew good and well that he had to corrupt that line to make it inhuman if he was going to have a chance at surviving. This is trying to save his ass, really. And he did that by trying to think of a way to corrupt the genealogies, to get into our bloodline. Not because he wanted to be redeemed, but because he wanted to prevent anybody from coming to have authority to him. He had just bought back, Satan had just won the legal right to us and the entire world in the Garden of Eden. He did not intend to lose it. And so he had some of his angels. There's also a good reason. Here's a good reason why he also did this little trick here when he came down from, when he got the Benaha Elohim, the other angels that fell, that come down here and produce these Nephilim. Because he only brought a third of the angels with him. And he knew from prophecy that he was going to have to, at the end day, literally war with God. And if he only has a third of the angels, he's got a 2-to-1 deficit. Or whatever the math would be, not a math major, but, so by creating, if he corrupted the entire world in Noah's day, you got Noah and you got all the people pointing at him and laughing at him because he's got a boat in the middle of the desert, and all the people in the entire world that had filled up, that had, over the course of time since Adam, Satan had been busy corrupting all these people, creating this violent world filled with the genealogy of these kind of hybrid bloodlines, and they were not redeemable. That is, that they couldn't be saved, they couldn't be redeemed. So when they died, they created, this is a hypothesis, but I feel a very strong one, that those people that died in the flood, those quote people, the half people, literally became this disembodied souls, what we find with the demons in the New Testament and the Old Testament too, that are constantly seeking embodiment. That whole subsection of entities are not necessarily, that's why I don't put them in the category with fallen angels, because they seem to be something less than that. They seem to be, I don't know, but that's that really pushed up the number of people under the dominion of Satan and more in his army. That's why he has so many of them now. But he's got another way to do that now in this technological age, and we got to get to that here in just a second. That's what the Nazis had everything to do with, and Blavatsky and the rest of it. And just also, this concept is also what will explain a lot of things about the Old Testament that people always say, what about the contradictions? God's talking about murder. He says he told Jacob to go in and kill every man, woman, and child. That doesn't sound like God. Well, you also have to take into account, this whole thing makes all that make sense. It's Satan, when he heard that this, you know, he had the Redeemer, you know, every time God would give a prophecy through a prophet about more, keep in mind there's 300 prophecies about this coming Redeemer, and you had better be aware that, Satan was had his ears at attention whenever he heard a prophecy about the Redeemer. And he did everything he could to prevent it. And so when he heard he was coming through different lines, he would kill all the babies. Every time he got an inkling of where it was coming, specifically, as God narrowed down where it was going to come from, it was going to come through David's line, it was going to come through Bethlehem, it was going to come at this time, through this way, he kept narrowing his search, narrowing his focus, rather. And so you have at this point, when he knew that they had to come to the promised land of Israel, Satan had, I think it was, I don't know how many years, in order to quote Leah, a minefield in Israel. So he had created these Nephilim giants all throughout the Rephaim and these tribes that were giants. When he sent them into the land, to the scouts to go in and check it out right before they were about to take, you know, Israel, the scouts came back and were like, dude, there are giants in the land. We are like grasshoppers in their sight. And, you know, they were serious. I mean, because they brought back, like, they were big. You know, they weren't like kind of big. They were really, really big. And so when God made the commandment to go in there and kill every man, woman, and child without mercy, it was an irredeemable minefield that Satan had set up. And so you have to read that is the kind of thing that we have to understand in regards to that. There is, and I know that that's going way off the end of you know, a lot of people aren't gonna hear that or whatever, and I agree. You know, if you're not gonna go there with me, that's fine, but it does help in explaining what I'm about to explain here with the World War II situation. Okay, so yeah, the bloodlines were that. That's why the European bloodlines were always so crazy, and why they had to marry within the family, and they were always so crazy about that, and you know, only marrying their cousins and whatever, you know, sons, you know, incest and the rest of it. Even from Babylon, they were always doing that, because there is a cult power in the blood. I don't mean that in just a general term. I mean that the Nephilim bloodline and that blood in there is, I don't know if it's able to be, I don't know, the best way that I can think to explain that is that there is something about the blood. I think that somehow the connection between our life, maybe our soul is somehow attached to the blood somewhere. I don't know what the deal is, but life and blood seem to be connected. And I think that somehow the spiritual aspect also connects to it. I would even doubt that maybe, or wouldn't doubt that demonic attachment and possession even has to do with blood. And that when you get inquire demons through opening doors, some people have to open them less and less. It probably depends on, you know, authority that's been given, and, you know, blood and the rest of it. That's a long story about that. I don't know if time to get into all that. I'm just going to say that the bloodlines were preserving Nephilim blood for various reasons, but certainly for power. And because they were told to, I would imagine, because you start to see this eventually when you put on the glasses and start to make sense of all this. You really start to see that this New World Order system and this quest for a world government that really works has been, without a hitch, been going pretty smoothly for thousands and thousands of years. And that has to suggest that the plan is not some mystery school, is not some Masonic order, not some, you know, anything like that. It's not even the Nephilim themselves, because they even the sons of God, the high-ranking angels in this whole thing that came down from literally a place of to disrobe from their perfect immortal bodies to come down here, they got screwed. They did not have a good situation. You know, they got put in the abyss. and they're locked there until the last day. So it wasn't their agenda. It was whoever sent them's agenda, a higher ranking entity than them. So, and you know, I know that you have to stop thinking also of angels like they're some kind of allegorical poetic thing, because I've done a show here. I'd encourage you to go listen to it regarding David Flynn's view of what the original habitations, the pre-man situation, that's before Adam, the first created race, the angels, who, like I said earlier, are physical beings. They're as physical as you and I, but and probably more so. I mean, probably have more substance to them than we do. It's just that the way the dimensions work, we don't perceive them. That means nothing about their realness or not realness. I say substance in that they probably, you know, eat and breathe. I don't know if they eat and breathe or whatever. I don't know how it works. But apparently, Rahab and this whole situation of what Mars and the exploded planet, which became the asteroid belt, literally could have been these habitations of pre-man angels, and that Satan at one point, when he was the, quote, covering cherub, the most powerful being that God ever created, that was this angel that was actually ruling over civilizations, or ruling, I don't know, probably isn't a good word, but they were giving glory to God in the monuments of Sidonia, and that they were doing all this stuff that and even in pre-Earth, I think that that's where you can make a case for some of the pre-existent Atlantis-type things and whatnot. And that might have been completely even before man even touched the face of the Earth. That could have been completely and totally angelic in its nature, and we had nothing to do with that. There's nothing to suggest that if Atlantis was here, that men had anything to do with it at all. If you start to understand that angels are real, they're not some poem. They are real, and we deal with them. And even the people that would try to denounce what I'm saying is some kind of delusion of a Christian is just those same people would agree that there are spiritual entities that you can contact through channeling. Well, yes, of course. Now they exist, but what you're talking about is not true. Well, you know, I mean, I guess to each his own, but you know, we at least have to agree that there's a good deal that you and I are unaware of, and that reality is at least completely different than we think. And I'm not just talking about what the government says and is not true. I'm talking about reality of the universe is far weirder than we ever conceived. History, the rest of it. So you get in a sense of this minefield of Satan needing more soldiers. And the rules of engagement have always been that he needs free will. And he came up with a really good way to get it that has nothing to do with the traditional way of getting free will. And that happened in the Nazi regime and Germany. And those scientists came up with a system of creating multiple personalities in a person, and those are real personalities, each with that they're created through episodes of trauma. A lot of different types of trauma are used nowadays in the system. They tend to use trauma that doesn't leave physical marks. But once those personalities are created, they can be given identities. You can tell them and quote program them, tell them what they are, how, you know, what they or their assignment is, what kind of things. And there's a lot of this love bombing of, you know, we created you, you're going to be loyal to us. And then they give them trigger codes and say you're only supposed to come forward when this and this, and then they shove them back in there. And then they, depending on what their assignment is, if you have an assignment of, oh, if it's an assassin or if it's something like that, they bring it up and they'll give it training. And like, okay, come forward, you know, spend, you know, whatever, how long it takes to do a particular kind of training, send them back, you know. And then that's the reason satanic rituals are so prevalent in this. And that's why you almost, I'd say, from what I hear and see, 95% of people with multiple personality disorders have also what's known as satanic ritual abuse, which they've tried to whitewash and say is just a figment of their imagination. But they are kids, and they are, you know, not kids. Everybody's saying the same stories, that they're being taken to satanic rituals and, you know, and this bloodletting and a lot of really egregious stuff is going on at them. But the reason that that's intertwined with it is because they demonize a particular personality to give it power. There may be, and once one demon gets in, others can get there, but generally it seems that they are attached to a particular personality. There is any number of demons that can be attached, and they also give different powers to the individual. Sometimes there's kind of like a Stockholm syndrome of the fact that they're being told they're being protected because of their powers that are being given, so they don't really want... And most of them will have some kind of priestess personality that knows how to conjure demons in the event of losing them, or, you know, there's always associated with covens and the rest of it. And this is all detailed very well by Russ Dizdar. There's an excellent course that he teaches in order to minister and heal these people that have this, which there's 4 million, some say 5 million diagnosed cases of multiple personality and satanic ritual abuse in America. And that, you know, it's a complete and total healing process that the psychiatrists aren't even allowed to do. Deliverance of demons is such a huge part of that. I mean, you still have to minister to each individual personality, but you have to get rid of the demons, and psychologists and psychiatrists are forbidden by law from doing deliverance of demonic entities. So you kind of there's a rock and a hard place. But one of his courses on his website, shatterthedarkness.net, is Freedom Encounters, and I highly recommend that one. And it really would give you... But he's got a lot of free material to get a better understanding of this aspect of it and the actual technological workings of how multiple personalities and the demonic work into it. And that was something that over the course of the show that really solidified, and I'm so glad to have found him and Zeph, because it really made a lot of things make sense that I had a sense of, but just needed to really put a lot of pieces together. So I would recommend Russ Dizdar, and he's got a podcast out there on iTunes, I think, now, too. Go to Podomatic. I think it's preemptionbroadcast.podomatic.com. And he's uploading podcasts there. It's all in one place nowadays. So anyway, this is a huge part of the system. And this is what really makes me sure that we are in the end game here. We're at the very latter parts of this being used. Because if they are indeed getting their information from interdimensional entities or whatever, and those interdimensional entities are telling them to train this force, who knows how strong, 10 million strong, of these multiple personality people that can be triggered all at one time, one at a time, it doesn't matter, but they have this army of people that have at just one trigger, you know, that can have a cult loyal, Luciferian, satanic loyal personality on the inside that is ready to do some damage, you know, then you have to understand this has been going on since about, you know, the 60s, 50s and 60s. You know, it's been really solidifying here lately to now it's just like a really locked down system that, you know, your neighbor could be, the whole family could be in on it, and they don't even know it because of the nature of the system. The upfront personality it doesn't experience any of that. When somebody calls on the phone and says, hey, let me speak to, you know, name the personality, the person doesn't even know that time is missing while a trigger or, you know, further information was given to a particular personality. Most people have no idea that they themselves are even abusing their children. And most people, you know, come to terms with the fact that they are, in fact, abusing their children the way that they were. And it just keeps perpetuating and perpetuating. It's a really finely tuned system that is only as crazy as you're willing to accept, because it's here, and most of your politicians are even part of this. And I say part of it, and that they probably don't even know. I mean, they're all controlled. It's a system of being controlled by people that don't understand, like nobody in the whole system until you get to really, really even high up is probably, you know, really in on it, you know, like are actually pulling the strings, as it were, and handing down the mandates and so on. But my point about it being close is that Now we have a Earth filled with people ready to rock. And they believe, once you start to deprogram them, that they are about to be used in the Black Awakening, as they call it, but to basically have a coup d'etat. To a lot of them are already in police, you know, police forces and stuff, but they have personalities and different people on, you know, taking notes of who to take out and when this trigger happens. They have superiors and assignments and things to do to when the dust settles from this mass chaos that they will have knocked off all these positions of power and will be in effect sitting on top of the from that point on it will be complete control. But they believe they're doing it for the Antichrist system. They think that they're going to be soldiers for the Antichrist. They don't understand that a lot of them are going to put the gun in their mouth and shoot them, just like a lot of these assassins and school shooters and so on do. They don't understand that they have that program too. There's another personality that just knows to do that. That's going to be triggered when it's all done. And they, there may be a few of you that may be needed a little bit after your job is done as far as the Black Awakening. But a lot of you are just going to off yourself. And it's that your handlers are liars. They lied to you. They were the ones that tortured you in the first place. When they created you by torturing you. That's not love. It's a hell of a situation. Okay, I want to read something from Revelation 12, and I think this pretty much sums up everything. And I'm just going to read through it, and it really explains that Satan really is real and paying attention to this prophecy of this Redeemer and what his plan is. This lays out his plan, and it makes all this make sense, what we've been talking about here. It says in verse 1 of chapter 12 in Revelation, it says, "And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of stars." Those idioms there are explained in Isaac, and you can go through that and find each one of those idioms. This is pointing directly to Isaac, and then the crown of 12 stars is referring to the 12 tribes of Israel, his 12 sons. And so this is, so when it talks about the woman here, it's referring to Israel. "And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. And there appeared unto her," and the child that she was going to give birth to was the prophesied that she was going to give birth to the Redeemer. And that is discussed, I mean, it's prophesied through Abraham after Babel, and the rest of the world was given over to worship the Nephilim, and they were assigned essentially different Nephilim in geographical areas. The next verse is when he calls Abraham and says, "Abraham, come over here. Of you, I'm going to make a great nation." At that point, he sets up the whole Jewish system for the purpose of foreshadowing and bringing about this Redeemer, to have one little slice of the pie in which to save the rest of those people that ended up worshiping the Nephilim, if you will. And so here, it says, "And she, being with child, cried, travailing in birth and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another wonder in heaven. Behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his head. And his tail drew a third part of the stars of heaven and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born." The red dragon, which is explained here in verse 9 very clearly, it says, "The great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world." So the dragon is Satan here, who that is. And it says that it was ready before the woman to devour the child. It was ready. It had made plans to devour this child just as soon as it was born. And that's, we find that with Herod and the different influences that were to try to kill every child in the land. So this is his attempt to eliminate the cause of this Redeemer from buying him back, buying us back, rather. And it says, "She brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared for her by God, that she should feed there feed her there 1,260 days. And there was a war in heaven, and Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought against his angels, and prevailed not, neither their place was found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world, he cast out into earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying, Now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ, for the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before God day and night. They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, that ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth, and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knows he hath but a short time. Okay, this is where it gets kind of interesting here. So the devil is now here with us, and he has great wrath because he knows he has but a short time. What do you think that he is doing with his short time? I submit that he's making the most of it. And that's what we see with this infrastructure being built in your city and your town around you. While you see cameras at every intersection, and while you see the ID chip coming, and while you see all this police state stuff happening, is because infrastructure, world government is being built around you, because his time is short, and he's going to exert control over you and your family and your body and your mind like nobody has ever tried to exert before. And he's going to do it with literally willing agents of his. Continuing here, it says, And when the dragon saw that he was cast onto the earth, he persecuted the woman that brought forth the man-child. Okay, well, first he goes after the Jews, and I think that history kind of records that he goes after the Jews hardcore, and he really goes, and that's what says what he does when he saw that he was cast into the earth. And then it seems like in, you know, verse 16, where she gets the remnant seems to be supernaturally saved here in the last bit, and they do get out of the way, and then he turns his attention to the Christians and this time that we're about to go into, and I submit we're already kind of there. Is when he has focused his eye, kind of like the Lord of the Rings, on the Christians. And you know, you can feel that happening now, Christian out there. You can feel that it's not too long. Only a few short things have to happen. And that could include aliens. And there's going to be a massive propaganda thing when that kind of thing gets put on CNN and the rest of it. That they're going to say that equals that Christians are crazy and wrong. And in fact, are the problem, and that because we still will be claiming that this is what it said in the Bible, and they're going to just know that we're crazy then, so we're going to be literally persecuted and killed under the direction of this new dictator. To move on into the great age of enlightenment, we're going to need to be eliminated. And there's going to be a lot of traction gained in that, and you can feel that now. Some of the people that email me hate mail and stuff are the same people that would be in Rome cheering as the Christians were eaten by lions. They don't even have any logical reason. You know, if you're so secular and you don't care about it, what do you care? Why do you hate a particular religion? Is there another religion that you hate, or is it just Christians? And, you know, I understand that there's fake Christians and Christians that you don't like the look of, and I submit that they were created for that purpose, and a lot of these mind control people are heads of churches, are on Trinity Broadcasting Network, are, you know, pretty much your entire perception of Christianity. The pedophile priests and all that stuff, that is a monster created to do exactly what it's doing, to give you this perception that Christianity is something that it's not. And I know that you're probably not going to come out of that and see it the other way, but I want to put a major seed of doubt in your mind that Christianity possibly could have nothing to do with what you think it does, and that real Christians are actually people that when you talk to are people that take a genuine humility and interest in what you have to say and really care and have compassion for you, regardless of what you think or believe, and wouldn't try to force anything on you or, you know, I mean, it's a whole conception issue that has been, you know, pushed on us by design. And it's interesting to me that even the people that are being abducted by aliens, if you will, I encourage you to go to Alien Abduction Crisis Centers of America. .org. It's a AACCOA.org. And read through some of the testimonies on that site. And some, a lot of testimonies of people that Joe Jordan and Jim Wilhelmsen have counseled over the years. And it's the only way that they've ever stopped alien abduction. It's the only way that it's ever happened. Just read through some of that and get a sense of the kind of agenda that these aliens have. And I'm not claiming to know what they are, what they're not, but I would say that they're is genetic modification going on. And there is stuff going on underground right now. And there are hybridization of not just corn and not just soy, but animals and humans, and a lot of weird stuff is happening right now. And I contend the people that are running this country, running this world, are in fact Satanists. And that they have all this money and power and military technology, and they're doing it to benefit and to serve a spiritual agenda, and that it's possible that the stuff in our water, fluoride, and the cell phone grid and the extremely low frequency grid are there to thin the veil, that the fluoride might be there to keep us, the pineal gland or whatever it is, from being connected more spiritually. I think that there is spiritual attacks everywhere. I'm a conspiracy theorist, you know, you can, I got my aluminum foil hat ordered. It should be here this next week. So, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm going to go ahead and call this a show. I really hope I got across what I was trying to get across, which I really, really don't know and doubt seriously. But thanks for listening. I encourage you, if you want to support the show, to pray for me. Pray for whatever you can think of that I need, but also to keep from giving out disinformation in this sea of disinformation that we have to sift through. And I would really appreciate that. I can definitely thank you for them. Without them, this wouldn't even be possible. And I ask God to providentially get this into the hands of those that need it, and that it would answer those questions, and that they would know that God has given this to them because he wants them to know the truth. You know, go with your gut, but certainly double check everything. Don't believe anything, especially entering into this situation that we're going to go in. Be put on the full armor of God in Ephesians 6, I think, and read what that is. And that's how you're going to protect yourself and your family, by prayer. Continue to pray. We're going to need miracles every day, and so we need to increase our faith because we can move mountains with it. We're going to need daily provisions from God in order to survive the world that we're being plummeted into. So stay in prayer, and I'll see you next week. And that's it. Take it easy.